ready to go. Let me just, I think everything is fine. Let me just turn off any type of notifications. One second here. So you're still in New York or where are you?
No, I mean, I've normally been in the Bay. You know, I moved out from New York to the Bay back in 2017.
Oh, okay.
But this year, spending a lot of time on the East Coast, just this year in 2021, right. We shut our offices down. So we're fully remote until August. So I'll be back to San Francisco sort of in the August, September, October time period.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
Yeah. So how is everything in Toronto?
Yeah, Toronto's great. It's the weather's finally, we had the first good weekend. So it's usually really good when the weather's here. It's awesome.
What is it like in Fahrenheit or Celsius?
Okay, 20, like let's say for us, like a 20 degrees. Like,
so hold on, 20 degree. The shorthand math is times two. So it's like 30. So that's like 40 subtract 10%, 36 plus 32. So like 68, 70 degrees. Yeah, that's pretty nice. Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Like, it's just good. Yeah. And we've got a puppy. So.
Oh, no way. Okay.
With me and like so many other, every other family I know has a puppy now.
what kind of puppy?
It's a mini bulldog.
Oh, wow. Okay. What kind of French bulldog or?
It's a regular.
Yeah, okay.
My kids are 18 and 15, so
nice.
Because they've been otherwise just stuck at home.
Yeah.
So this is like their thing. So
perfect. Honestly, it's a perfect time to get a puppy. Yeah. I don't know what's happened to puppy prices. I should probably check.
They've gone up through the roof. Do you have a dog?
We have a dog who still looks like a puppy. She's 3.5 pounds, toy Yorkshire Terrier, but she's almost 12.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's getting up there.
And are you married or not really?
No, a serious girlfriend. I've been together.
Girlfriend from last time, right?
Yeah, yeah. We've been together for like 7-8 years, so need to eventually buy that other ring too. But COVID's a good excuse, you know. Indian, and it's the perfect time to get married, but you know, an Indian parent will never let that happen. Never.
That's awesome. Okay, yeah. Let's start. I'm going to just do the intro and then we can start. And then, by the way, your bio, I'm just going to do it some other time. So don't worry about that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's fine. And we can send one if we haven't sent them.
Yeah, if you don't mind sending me.
Yeah, sure. We'll follow up after with the teams to make sure we send that.
Okay.
Cool. Okay.
Perfect. Yes. Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Sanjeev Goyal, and you're listening to the Advanced Anti-Aging and Technology Summit. Today, I have Harpreet Rai, who's the CEO of Oura Ring. With me. So I think you're going to have a great episode all about sleep. How are you, Harpreet?
I'm good, Sanjeev. You know, I'm probably like a readiness score. I want to say like 84 today. So I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. How about yourself?
Yeah, yeah. My readiness score is, because I track this religiously for the last 3 years or so, 81 readiness, but 87 sleep. So
okay.
It started like at about 74 in the morning, and then I went back to sleep because I wasn't happy with that reading, and I bumped it up.
I almost did the same because I had like a 93 yesterday, so I was like, oh, should I sleep in an extra hour? But I was like, 84 is pretty good. Let me get about going my day. So
right.
Glad I did.
So I was just telling you just offline that, you know, everyone I've interviewed, all the biohackers and scientists and doctors all have an Oura Ring. So it's nothing like it's really has taken over, I think, the biohacker community and all the physicians who are interested in precision medicine. They understand the value of the technology. But maybe before we get into that, I'd love to just, if you could just give a bit of background on how you even got involved in this field. Why is it, why do you want to dedicate your life to this? To this, you know, area?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, I think for me, it was a little bit of probably, you know, an interest in health took place for me at a young age, primarily out of two reasons. One, fear. Unfortunately, I just saw too many loved ones and grandparents at the time just have a heart attack or stroke or pass at a young age. So all four grandparents of mine have had heart attack and stroke in their 60s. And then one of my grandmothers, actually, who was living in Windsor, Canada, not too far from Toronto. She passed in her late 50s. And so congestive heart failure. And, you know, I was only like 10 years old, but I think it was like the first time sort of realizing like that shouldn't have happened. Right. I think just even as a young kid hearing like, oh, it was so young. And then, you know, I'm like, oh, wait, how long do people live? Because you don't really think about that stuff when you're a 10-year-old. And they're like, no, 70, 80 years old. And, you know, she's like, you know, not even 60. And so, and then, you know, shortly after that, I saw all three other grandparents have heart attack or stroke. Luckily didn't, you know, they didn't pass as quickly, but still. And then I think from the performance side, my own personal experience was, I felt like trying to play sports, you know, I just felt like I had to work twice as hard to be half as good as everyone else. So I felt like no matter how I trained or what I seemed to eat or thought I was eating or how I was eating, that I just, you know, couldn't perform at the same level as my teammates. And my sport was soccer, you know, 5'5", 5'6" with a turban, as I like to say. Yeah. And
like the Indian Messi.
Yeah, exactly. I wish. But yeah, I think, so for me, it was like a little frustrating. And then I started to just track things religiously at a young age. Because, you know, I started learning about exercising, calories, even just out of frustration, being forced to learn about that stuff. And then I think, you know, long story short, I studied electrical engineering. My dad was an electrical engineer. My grandfather one was an electrical engineer as well. And I specifically studied sensor tech, you know, MEMS, which is, you know, movement sensors, accelerometers, but even now lots of things like the optical sensors, along with the movement sensor and an aura ring is coming from MEMS technology. And that was really my first ideas in like thinking of like, well, everyone's body is different. You know, my body reacts differently. Where am I in my health? How can I improve? What's good for me? I had this idea of like, well, eventually we should all just have these sensors and these sensors should just measure where we are. I you know, ended up not going directly into health and engineering when I graduated, but into investing. I worked at a year after college at investment bank at Morgan Stanley and then spent 9 years at a hedge fund. And at the bank, I gained 50 pounds. And that was probably my first time being seriously overweight. You know, I was like 190-ish pounds, right? Doing investment banking. And then in the preceding probably 2-3 years, that's when I became just a whole different level of dedication. And I lost almost about 55 pounds, got down to like 135 pounds and, you know, had visible abs. Like for an Indian person, I feel like that doesn't happen much. But I just, you know, I started tracking every single meal I ate. I started, you know, in a spreadsheet, I used to weigh my food. I went on my first keto diet, probably 2009, my first intermittent fasting diet, 2010. And, I'm actually not one of the founders of Aura. I'm the CEO, but I'd met one of the co-founders and eventually all of them, you know, after they'd just done a Kickstarter for the Generation One ring. And I saw what they had. And even though the ring was really big and bulky, the battery life was only one night, I sort of knew the advancements that would happen on the technology and power consumption side from both my investing and engineering experiences. But even more, I think, you know, what I saw was like how many people needed this, like, because once I started using the product and it's so easy to track sleep and things like HRV and recovery, I could just start to make better day-to-day decisions. And I felt like that ease of knowledge and access to the human body on a day-to-day basis without having to use spreadsheets, without having to use things like, you know, even the MegaWave, which a lot of athletes used to use, or just doing, you know, a chest strap measurement and HRV for the morning. I just found something, this was so easy. It was so easy to stick to. And it was just such an easy reminder. I could just look at my data and be like, oh, no, yesterday I slept like crap. Oh, that's right, because I ate late. Don't do that again today. And I wouldn't do it again today. And so I think the founders need some help growing the business, generating revenue. You know, I think just understanding how to get to profitability, basic business things, but I understood all the technology too. And so I think we just hit it off. I ended up investing in the company, joined the board of directors. I think 3 months after that, I was spending probably 30, 40 hours a week with them versus my regular job. And, you know, they asked me to join full time, which I did. And then, you know, after a year, both the board and founders thought it made sense for me to be CEO. So yeah, it's been 3 years now as CEO, 4 years with a company and 5 years as an investor. So definitely been a journey, but it's been a ton of fun.
Well, I think you're right at the exact right time. I mean, this technology, you know, the Aura Ring came right at the, I think the time of technology made it possible, and all the interest came in also sleep at the same time. I think we'd also see an understanding of the impact of sleep on our health, and, you know, so it's a whole like perfect storm. So maybe I just loved if you could just maybe chat about what are the cool features that you think make, you know, the Aura Ring special. I think that would be really cool.
I think sleep and tracking sleep frankly, if you look at wearables today, even still the Apple Watch doesn't do it. Right. You know, they'll track time in bed, but that doesn't really tell you much. So I think understanding sleep, deep sleep, REM sleep, the different stages of sleep, even just frankly, like consistency of sleep timing and how much that makes an impact on circadian rhythm. But I'd say the other one is really HRV. I think so many of our users probably look at HRV as you know, I think the science indicates that an overall measure of stress, whether it's physical stress and recovery, or frankly, mental stress. And so I just think such an easy, accurate way to do it. We're the only commercial wearable, still shock, well, it doesn't shock me, know why, but we're the only wearable that's shown that our data, our sleep data, you know, our heart rate and our heart rate variability, heart rate and heart rate variability data during sleep is 99% and 98% correlated to EKG. And no risk-based wearable has shown that. And so I think for us, it's just such an accurate measure and such an easy thing to do. You know, a ring weighs 4 grams or five, you know, less than 5 pennies. And, you know, you just sort of put it on and forget it there. It's there and it lasts a week. So I think it's that accuracy and the data it looks at, and then also the convenience, those two things together, the accuracy and the convenience, I just think are so easy, make it so easy for the customer to use.
So maybe let's do a little bit of deep dive on each one of those. You mentioned the accuracy of the sleep parameters, compared to like a sleep study, I guess.
Yeah.
What exactly, how does that compare to, I know Fitbit has sleep, you know, monitoring
device.
And I think I went to World Sleep Congress. They did say that, yeah, it was one of the Oura Ring was the most accurate, but I'd love to just hear from you, like how you've proven that.
And there's some good stuff coming on the way soon publicly, probably in the next, call it 6 to 8 weeks, that'll be out there as well. So the way you form these algorithms is essentially and test them. So, you know, same way you create them is sort of the same way you test them. You take a lot of people and you have them sort of do what's known as the gold standard or reference. In the case of sleep, it's polysomnography.
Right.
Hard word to say, but it's abbreviation is easier. PSG, polysomnography. And all that is if you were to go in a sleep lab at University of Toronto, at NYU, wherever, what they do is they strap your head, you know, and even your nose and your mouth to probably 16 different wires. So you have all these wires like pasted to your head. It's really hard to sleep in a sleep lab. And what they're looking at is you know, breathing rate, heart rate, but mainly actually, they're looking at your frequency of your brain, that your brain waves, the frequency of your brain waves and the speed of those waves while you're sleeping. And they then score these, you know, sleep science is a relatively new science, but they'll basically look at those different frequencies to figure out if you're in REM, light, and deep sleep, or if you're awake. And so what you do to create these algorithms is you look at all the data that's coming off your sensor, like in the case of an Oura Ring, the LEDs, the movement, the, you know, respiratory rate, the heart rate variability, even the temperature that we track. And you compare it against these brainwaves and you create an algorithm. And so I think what, you know, wearables in general, well, I should take a step back. Sleep staging as a whole, if I took that test and showed it to a sleep score at University of Toronto, or I showed it to a sleep score at NYU, they'd agree on about 80% of the data. So sleep's a pretty noisy science. They're still like, hey, were you really in REM sleep or deep sleep? Because it looks like you switched between the two, you know, three times within, you know, sort of that 30 seconds or 5 minute epic. And, you know, that 5 minute period in the sleep study exam. And so there's a lot of variability in how these are scored. So most people don't realize that. So the best you can sort of get, even gold standard is about 80% accurate or 20% standard error. I think wearables as a whole, you know, I think have shown sort of, you know, high 60s. And I think even us, that's what we've shown historically. And we were the first wearable to actually have an independent sleep study analysis on Gen 1, you know, which is a ring that came out in 2015, 2016. Our Gen 2 just recently is starting to get some validation stuff done. And we'll have something updated there. But I think, you know, we sort of feel like we're in the mid 70s now, early to mid 70s. And so I think we'll have that validated pretty shortly here. And so I think that's going to be pretty exciting. But most other companies haven't really attempted to do much validation. I think that's a little bit of a disappointing thing. And I would point out here that what matters more here than accuracy is precision. So I think the benefit of a wearable is, while it may not be as accurate, and I'll give a real life example, it can be more repeatable day to day. You don't want to go to that sleep lab with 16 wires, but you can sit in the comfort of your own home or anywhere, a hotel room, anywhere you are, and see the changes in the data. So whether, let's say, you're 40 minutes of deep sleep or 50 or 55 or even 60 minutes of deep sleep, what matters is, hey, those nights you have a lot of stress, you drink alcohol, you eat really late, like you're up late, you know, binge watching Netflix, right? Or whatever it may be, you're stressed out because of work, or if you got in an argument with a loved one. I think it's the change night to night that's super important. And so we've actually focused our algorithms on that change, on that precision, because that's sort of how the customer uses it and understands which lifestyle choices are good for them and which lifestyle choices are bad for them.
So it's not, yeah. So for give you an example, like my wife had regularly has a deep sleep over 2 hours.
Wow.
And if I have one,
she's good.
My 1 hour and 20 minutes, I feel that's amazing. So you're saying it's not so important to compare to somebody else, but rather against yourself.
I can
tell when I make an hour and a half, I'm very happy. If I'm at 45 minutes, it's a different type of sleep.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to ever hit 2 hours. It's very unusual for me to hit that type of level.
Correct. And even for, I think it's, the, you know, just like yoga, it's like, don't look at anyone else, focus on yourself. Right. That's exactly right. We've actually made our algorithms, the way we calculate our scores, mm-hmm. all based on the relative changes to you. And we'll actually re-baseline you. So we have a rolling baseline average, but, that way as you improve, or if you get worse, it doesn't keep penalizing you as much and encourages you just to do a little bit better. So yeah, I think the relative change, it's trend lines, not headlines. And that's something Matt Walker says often, really famous sleep scientist and author, wrote Why We Sleep. And so I think he's absolutely right with that statement. It's sort of trend lines, not headlines, that you want to look out for.
That's really interesting. I do notice that if you have a couple of good days, then you're going to have, it kind of helps you have another good day. I guess the algorithm is kind of like you build up to a good day. It's hard to jump from 60 to 90 overnight.
Yes. I think partly because, you know, if you have one night of bad sleep, you can sort of like tough through it, but it's like that repetitive sort of like 6 hours, 5.5 hours, 5 hours in a row that sort of really wanes on you. So the way we create the readiness score, it's specifically, it actually looks at both last night of sleep and last day of activity, but it then also looks at a 2 week average of your sleep and activity balance. And then a bunch of physiological changes from the night before, your heart rate variability versus their norm, your respiratory rate and temperature. And so we sort of get that long-term view. And to your point, it's like, you know, you want to build a little bit of resiliency. You're not just going to go from a 60 to a 90 just by one good night. And frankly, your body physiologically is not covered just with one night of recovery after a couple of bad nights either.
Right. Do you think that, so for example, the activity part, like, I mean, there's some people who perhaps not wearing it during the daytime, only wear it at nighttime. Are you seeing people get value from the daytime as much now?
I think 90% of our users wear it all day long. I think 10% just wear it all at night. We actually have now started doing a lot more activity things. So we added something called automatic activity detection recently. So that's a really new, cool feature. You're asking about key features. So AAD, as we call it, automatic activity detection. You know, if you go skiing or snowboarding, you'll open the app and it'll even say, hey, were you just skiing? You can confirm it. And by the way, it's an adaptive algorithm to you. So the more you actually confirm things, or even if it's incorrect, you correct it. Or if nothing comes up, just go in and add a tag, hit the plus button in the bottom of the right. The app, that algorithm actually gets personalized to you. So that's a really cool feature, because most other wearables don't personalize to the individual. And there's slight variations in how we do these things and just how we all move. I think another really cool feature we're seeing get a lot more usage out of is something we call moment or meditation. So you can listen to an audio track or do an unguided meditation, and actually after 5 minutes or a longer session, you can see your HRV and even your skin temperature change during your meditation session. And as you continue to meditate, most people will notice trends where their heart rate variability improves more and more during the session, as a measure to sort of look at how relaxed you're getting during that session. So I think that's really cool. And we even added something new called sleep sounds, So there's even a couple libraries where you can actually, if you have a hard time falling asleep, or if you just like, you know, blocking out those sounds and listening to something, you can actually listen to a couple stories or soundscapes. And we found users getting a ton of usage out of that. So I think as we kept growing, you know, start from sleep, but have started to do a lot more during the day to keep engaging the user and frankly, keep them practicing healthier and healthier habits.
Right. Let's move on. Just before we move on from sleep, I know a lot of, I think I may have even asked you this a couple of years ago about sleep apnea. And have you been able to look at the data and maybe give some help to people who might be suffering from this?
Yeah. So
it's such much a silent kind of condition sometimes.
Yeah, I think we're going to do more there. Right now, what we've seen with a lot of people that do have sleep apnea is they'll have a lot of interruptions in their data during the night, or they'll have really low stages of sleep, you know, deep or REM, and that'll be reflected in their data. And so people start asking themselves, well, like, I feel like I'm doing all the right things to go to bed, but I'm still not getting appropriate scores. And so we found a lot of people just noticing that and hence going and getting a sleep study done and then realizing they have apnea. But I do think over time, we'll start to actually see what we can do as a company to do more in the app about like giving the user a little bit of a check engine light if something looks off. Mm-hmm. The FDA is pretty particular about sleep apnea. And so as a result, like we got to be careful and make sure we have enough specific data on that. And probably, you know, like we've done and we did with COVID, do a large scale study, publish results. Then when we make a feature, refer back to, hey, this looked like data in XYZ study or similar to that study, you may want to go see someone about it versus trying to, you know, what the FDA hates is if you try to diagnose or treat. So I think let the user sort of give them enough data and enough context to make their own judgment call and let a doctor make the diagnosis. But I think there's more we can do there in the future and I'm pretty excited for it.
So it looks like there is some type of signature, perhaps, like from the data you're collecting.
Yeah.
I would think that there should be, like from heart rate or something, you know, people, if they're going hypoxic, they should.
Totally. I think, hypoxic, you can definitely see changes, rapid changes in respiratory rate, heart rate and heart rate variability, and frankly, more fragmented sleep, mm-hmm. right? A lot more wake ups, a lot more tossing and turning, a lot more, you know, or more light sleep, less REM and deep.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen any, are you collecting any way to find out the impact your app is having on people's health?
We did. I know something, there's a professor at UCLA who recently did a study on behavior change in wearables. And he recently just submitted that to a medical journal. So we're eagerly awaiting. I think what we have been told is that it's a cut ahead. Just because I think a little bit is focusing on sleep and recovery instead of focusing on steps. I think most other wearables, you know, really just still focus like Fitbit did early days of just hitting this certain activity score. And frankly, like we know the stats on activity, like most people unfortunately aren't as active as they should, but even if they are and you eat really poorly, or if you're doing work super late at night, or if you're, you know, drinking alcohol really close to bedtime, like you're never going to feel great. You know, the next day. And so I think just leading with sleep is something that is frankly more beneficial, lets people sort of understand those decisions outside of movement a lot better, like, you know, timing of food, quality of food, right? Even just how stressful activities you want to engage in before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. So I think it just builds healthier lifestyle habits as a whole by focusing on sleep. And then as we know from the science of sleep, right? If you sleep better, you're going to have more energy. You're going to feel more productive. Your hormones are going to be in the right place. Your hunger, you know, ghrelin or how fully you feel leptin, right? All your key hormones, your general, you know, insulin response are going to be so much better if you're sleeping properly. So I think that's part of the other reason too. It's just, you know, when you start with sleep, sort of everything else becomes easier.
Right. Let's move on to the heart rate part. Particularly, I always look at the lowest heart rate from my sleep. I find that is a very useful marker. I'm just wondering, why did you pick that? I mean, that's usually always, it's highlighted as one of the heart rate metrics.
Yeah.
Like an average heart rate. I know you have that as well, but the lowest point seems for me to be a very good indicator of how well I slept and stress my body's under.
Yeah. There's pretty good research out there that sort of shows there's this concept of midnight, you know, or there used to be this concept of midnight, and midnight used to be the middle of your night, right? Classic play on words, not that hard. I think as the human body relaxes throughout the night, typically your lowest resting heart rate is supposed to hit midway throughout that point. And then your hormones start to actually, you know, get ready to help you wake, which means, right, your cortisol level should increase, your heart rate should rise as you get ready to be, you know, awoken and attack the day. Mm-hmm. I think what looking at the resting heart rate does, the lowest resting heart rate, and sort of when it happened and what the value was, it sort of lets you understand is like, how close are you to fully recovered? If your heart rate actually, you know, lowered very late in the night, chances are you were doing something stimulated and had caffeine too late, had too much alcohol, had ate really late, were stressed because of work or because of, you know, some other, you know, personal reasons. And so it's looking at that timing sort of shows us, and we have some really good, you know, literature based on hundreds of thousands of nights of data, millions of nights of data, hundreds of thousands of users on our blog about this. And then also comparing just the sort of lowest resting point.
Yeah, that's versus, the one.
Yeah, versus previous days. Like that allows you to see like, oh, am I really well recovered today? Or no, am I not? Is my resting heart rate higher today? And I think it's hard to get a resting heart rate during the day because you're always sort of doing something. And so looking at it during sleep is a repeatable time, a repeatable pattern. It's sort of like performing the same science experiment every single night when you go to bed. And so we look at it for sort of those two reasons, the timing and then also the absolute value. It's just a really good thing to look at physiologically and stress-wise day to day.
You know, I don't want to forget asking this question. You know, we talked a little bit about COVID. I'd love to understand, see if you're seeing any data on people's health during COVID, like not acute infections, more about, you know, their inactivity, what impact did they have on sleep, the fact that they didn't maybe go outside as much, things like that. Then, you know, people gained weight, perhaps. I'm just wondering, is there any signs of sleep disturbance that happened during COVID time?
So, ironically, in the beginning of COVID, for sure, I think people were getting used to a new norm, but perhaps 3-4 months into it, we published this actually in our blog that people were becoming actually frankly, much more creatures of habit and similar patterns. And so overall sleep quality of our user base actually improved in sort of call it the first half of COVID, right? Because think about it, you're not going out. You're not staying at work late, right? Like you're sort of already at home and you're, you know, not going, seeing friends. There's not a lot of distractions. So people actually became remarkably more consistent. And so that resulted in our whole database for most users seeing an improvement in their data. Now there definitely was some 10% or so of folks whose data got a lot worse, probably just personal situations. Maybe their jobs were affected. Maybe they knew someone that was affected. Maybe they personally got sick. Right, where their data was getting worse. We haven't published an update follow-up to that, but I do think as COVID has continued on, you know, it has probably gotten a little bit worse, right? Where that consistency pattern is sort of like too dull for most people, and you know, hence leading to sort of unhealthier things. That okay, now they're starting to binge watch TV more. Right. They're really just like sort of have nothing to do and they're eating worse and they're not exercising as much, not getting outside. But at least in the beginning of COVID, we saw some positive results.
Yeah, no, I for sure I've seen from my patients, many of them took up more drinking because they're at home by themselves or with their board and no job. Then, you know, all the gyms are closed here in Toronto. They've been like that for last year and everybody's, you know, gaining weight. The heart rates have gone up a bit. So I think there's definitely something very interesting there. From personal use now, it's been over two summers. I've noticed that generally my numbers improved in the summer and became worse in the winter. So do you see some type of seasonal change like that?
Yeah, we do. I think we've published data on this that basically shows like summers are healthy for us, more healthier. And to your point, you're probably getting outside more, you're exercising more, right? It's nicer outside. And, you know, frankly, as a result, probably of doing those things, also eating better. And then I think the sunlight exposure, you know, I think for, you know, circadian rhythms, getting enough sunlight during the day, you know, definitely triggers all the right hormonal cascade to then even sleep better and feel more tired at night. And so I think, you know, seasonal affective disorder, right? You know, as a thing. Hence, I think, you know, in the summers for sure, we see better data. We definitely even see that more pronounced in the Nordics. You know, mm-hmm. our company started in Finland. And so there, you know, the summers are really, really short, but the days are long. And, you know, vice versa, the winters are long and the days are really short, not much sunlight. So I think we even see that even more pronounced in some of those areas of the world where there's not as much sunlight all year round.
Are you having a lot of user base now in let's say, you know, warmer countries, let's say India, Southern Italy? Like, are you seeing places where are much warmer? I know you, I was wondering if the same data would hold up. If you're all 24, if you're all year in a warm place, would it even still be like that?
Yeah, I actually don't know. I haven't looked at that. I do feel like we went and actually showed some, I feel like recently, or there's about to, or there was a study release showing different geographical patterns, but it still looked like it had seasons, if I recall correctly. So I'm sure relatively there's still some changing in weather patterns. So enough for people to still be more active during one part of the year and less active. And a lot of it may be cultural, right? Mm-hmm. So
let's move on to HRV. I know that is definitely one of the aspects of the ring that you really don't find anywhere else. And I use it myself as well. So can you tell me about the algorithm? What makes this HRV, I think, more accurate than, let's say, you know, people can wear a band as well. I mean, chest band and stuff like that. So how is this HRV calculated? Maybe I know it might be difficult to explain scientifically, but if you can kind of give a little
back. Sure. I mean, just maybe I can explain like what HRV is and how we measure it and calculate it. And maybe why it's easier to do for us than a wrist-based device. So HRV is heart rate variability. All it is the variability or variation of each heartbeat. And so I think, as you know, you and I sit here, let's say our heart rate, often quoted in beats per minute, BPM, let's say it's 60 beats per minute. And so what that means is across the minute, we're going to average 60 beats. Now, one beat might be 1 second apart. The next beat might be 1.2 seconds apart. The next beat might be 0.8 seconds apart. There's some variation between each beat. It's a little counterintuitive. You actually want high variation. You want high heart rate variability versus, you know, each beat only being 1 second apart or very low variation. The way I like to think about it is, you know, the human body is sort of, if you think about it, it has to adapt constantly. So if a tiger comes in this room, right, you have to jump up, you know, do the right thing, push a chair down, close the door, slam it in space and get out of the way, right? You have to think very fluidly. And so, you know, you're sort of like this race car idling and you need to go, boom, go, right? Versus if you're this race car and your RPM is all the way up, right? You're probably going to spin out, right? And so you want that high variation. It keeps you sort of in that flow state. And so, One metric that's important to notice is that actual space between each beat is called interbeat interval, okay. Interval or IBI. And so what we do at Aura, this is really, you know, a combination of the engineering side more so than even an algorithm. Measuring that data is actually pretty easy. You just got to be able to measure every single heartbeat. Now, the problem with wearables is, the signals on our wrist here are really weak. As we know, these signals are strong from our arteries. These arteries carry a lot of blood. You can feel the pulse. They go to the palm of your hand and your skin is really thin. You can even sort of see your hands are red. And so as a result, the pulse signal from the, you know, from your finger is about 100 times stronger than it is from, these are veins here. You can't feel the signal right when you touch them. It's buried below a lot of muscle tissue, you know, in my case, dark scar and even, you know, hand and dark skin and even hair. That pulse signal being so strong allows us to use very little power, but yet sample really, really fast. So we're able to sample our signals at 250 times a second, 250 hertz at night. And a wrist-based wearable, if it tried doing that, the battery would probably die in an hour. And so as a result, we can just see that pulse signal so much more clearly. Most wrist-based wearables, because, you know, the power usage is so high since that signal is weak, they actually turn off their heart rate sensors for a lot of the time, then turn them back on and they sort of extrapolate. So if you have a Fitbit or Apple Watch, sort of hard to do this on your Fitbit while you're sleeping, but like try to sleep with one eye open and you'll see that the heart rate sensor turns off and then turns on again. They, you know, really these risk-based devices don't have the ability to measure every single space between each beat. And so that's why we can do it all throughout the night. That's why we share that data with researchers or even doctors. You can download that data on our Aura Teams portal and actually get every single interbeat interval sent to you. So it's more like an engineering thing. The nomenclature that you can use for measuring this is you know, HRV, we use the standard, which is RMSSD or the root mean squared of successive differences in between each set. It's just sort of a little bit of a formula, probably not worth getting into, but you know, I think that's how we calculate it. It's more just that the other devices don't have the battery life or the engineering accuracy to expand for a long time to capture all that data throughout the night. And I think that's why so many people love our device, because it's such an easy thing to look at and get really accurate information on.
Mm-hmm. So if let's say you were to get up or there's a change in your HRV or sleep, like how many minutes or, you know, is the ring accurate for? Like, I know sampling you're saying is sampling so often.
Yeah.
It all the time. So if you get up and go to the bathroom for, I don't know, 30 seconds, is it gonna catch that?
Yeah, we still catch it. But what we do is HRV is typically calculated in a 5-minute interval. So each RMSSD is calculated sort of over a 5-minute period. And we, you know, bin each period all throughout the night in 5-minute increments. So if you get up and you move, you know, you might even see a hole in your data when you look at that. And that's what that is. We'll catch it. We'll still see it, like meaning you got up. But then because of that, we don't think the data is, you know, as accurate. So we'll exclude it from that data set.
Got it. Okay, perfect. I got that. What about other, are you guys looking at, you know, partnering with other people? You know, I know there's some companies are working on, you know, chilly mat, like working on, you know, cooling technology for the bed and seeing how that impacts sleep or,
yeah.
Where do you think things are going and, you know, with the ring in the future?
Yeah. I think the pandemic really gave us the blueprint for sort of how this kind of technology can be used. So, you know, during COVID, we were actually the first wearable to partner with an academic institution. So we worked with UCSF. We were the first wearable to start a study on COVID. And, you know, I think what we showed is basically UCSF actually had a paper published in December. And what they were able to show in that paper is that you could actually see data changing on an Oura ring up to 3 days in advance before users felt symptoms. And I think, you know, it sort of shows the power of high quality data and then machine learning and data science that, you know, you can train these algorithms amongst many different things. In this case, it was a positive COVID test. And UCSF was actually verifying that. Luckily, they got great funding and were able to actually send, you know, both saliva and blood tests and things like that to users who did get positive COVID tests. And many users were actually, you know, tracking their symptoms every single day, which was pretty cool. And so if you think about that for the future, just like you can train this wearable sensor data on sleep or activity, or even things like COVID, there's so many new health applications. So I think women's health, that's a pretty interesting area. We had a study published there in Berkeley, being able to look at, you know, the temperature data we see plus HRV and correlate that to LH surge, luteinizing hormone surge. I think you could do it for sleep apnea, as you were talking about. I think there's lots of things you can do in the heart space, whether it's hypertension, congestive heart failure, or arrhythmias. I think there's going to be so many new use cases where you can keep developing all these algorithms. So that's one area, just more health sensing features. Right. I think the other area, as you mentioned, is like, okay, how do I, now that I have this data, how do I improve it? Should I be doing things like using a chili pad? How much does alcohol actually affect my usage or working late? What if I start meditating? What if I start exercising? How much can I improve this data? So I think, you know, I always say that people want two things. Like, one, is this data accurate? Like, what's the use case and is it accurate? And then two, you know, sort of, what do I do with the data? Meaning,
yeah,
how do I improve it? How do I change, you know, change it? And so I think both those things are what we're focused on.
Yeah, I think that predictive analytics, or if there's recommendations, because I know you generally, we know that, yes, alcohol, we have to kind of still put this through our own brain computer to figure out, okay, what impact is that one drink going to have at 10 o'clock at night?
Yeah.
But if you can tell me, hey, it looks like if you do this, you're going to have like a, you know, 20% reduction in your sleep, that'd be pretty cool, because you have that data. You should put that through your interview and say, look, this
is. We are. I think one thing we ask our users to do is just keep tagging. Like the more people use our tagging function, the more we learn. And I think you'll see us do actually, frankly, more studies with volunteers, right? That's what COVID was. We reached out to our user base. You know, not that any of us wanted to get COVID, but likely some of us were going to in the user base. But what if we ask all our users to drink a glass of alcohol tonight or turn your thermostat down? I think you'll see us engage in a lot more of that. And we already are, because we do get, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of tags every single night or week. And so I think as we start to aggregate more of those, you know, we'll see us do some pretty fun stuff in the future.
That's awesome. Anything you want to end off, like the main message to our viewers and listeners, anything you want to say?
I mean, I sort of come back to, everyone's going to sleep every single night. It's perhaps one of the most meaningful things you can do for your quality of life and improving your health. And, you know, we've made it so easy, as have other companies, are making it easy for you to understand. It's a really easy way to look at sort of cause and effect every day and start to understand what health changes you can make that are actually driving an impact. And so I think, you know, most people don't realize that, you know, lack of deep sleep, for example, can be linked to early onset of Alzheimer's. You know, lack of sleep as whole can really cause, you know, weight gain, mainly because your hormones start to get imbalanced, your ghrelin, your hunger hormone, you know, shoots up, your leptin hormone, how full you feel after every meal, you know, unfortunately goes down. And so, you know, whatever you are trying to improve your health and performance for, just sleep makes it so much easier. So I sort of look at it, as Matt Walker said, like it's perhaps the single most legal performance enhancing drug you can do, right? And we all do it every night. You're going to do it no matter what, right? So why not get good at something that you're going to have to do every day anyway, that's going to make a huge impact on how you feel and perform for the rest of your life?
Yeah, I think this is the ultimate, I think it's the ultimate area for the biohacker, those who are trying to change their life, to hack their sleep. And so I think this is amazing work that you're doing, because it changes so many people's their lives. So hats off to you and Orwin.
Appreciate it. Luckily, we got an awesome team, and they keep growing and working really hard. I can't do anything by myself, but you know, I think, and we've had an amazing, you know, experience with our community and early users who've shared this with others. I think that's a lot of it too. It's like, you know, people seeing the changes they make. We've had so many users that are like, "Man, I got this, and I just realized I cut out my caffeine after 4 o'clock, and I stopped eating after 8. Like, I feel better, I perform better, I have more energy to hit the gym. I then, as you know, as a turn, kind of losing weight, I end up actually being more, you know, alert and productive during my workday. So I think all those things together, right? It's just all of us are a community, and, you know, we got to teach each other, we got to share with each other, and, you know, we got to do what we can and do our part and make things for each other too. So, you know, appreciate you, you know, putting this together, because this is, you know, frankly, how people learn about these things and start to practice them. And then, you know, for your listeners, right, if they do see improvement, they've seen a positive thing, share it, right? Because for every one of us that's improved, there's still 10 other people who may still be suffering. So just really appreciate the work that you're doing as well, Sanjeev. Thanks a ton.
No, thanks so much. I just want to say one last thing, is that the first thing I do when I get up in the morning, I roll over, ask my wife what her score is. And so I can tell you that I haven't met, I mean, I think there's not too many things out there that people are that fanatic about. Like, you know, you have Mac users, you know, the people who are, you know, just a kind of car or whatever, but I feel like the Oura Ring isn't that type of situation, or like, so I don't, I'm wondering, do you feel that about your user base, that some of the extremely...
We do. I mean, no, look, I think, again, you're going to do it every day. So it becomes a daily habit, and it's that little reminder on how you can perform a little bit better. And yeah, we see that behavior a lot, that, you know, first thing people do, I think we've even said this, that, you know, majority of our users, I think it's like 75-80% of our users check the app in the first hour when they wake up.
Yeah.
And frankly, that's such a good reminder, because it's just, you see it first thing in the morning, and then it sort of shifts your focus. Okay, I'm a little behind the eight ball today. Mm-hmm. What can I do to do better tonight, so I feel better, you know, tomorrow, or vice versa? Hey, I'm feeling really good today. Today is probably a really good day for me to push extra hard in that workout, or get into the office early and get a lot of work done, because I'm going to be in the zone. So I think, I think it's just, it makes it a little bit more actionable. I have also found that I only ask my significant other, my partner, how I'm doing if I know my score is bad, because I do not, like, I don't want to get in a humble brag space. So if I'm like, you know, if I'm like 70s, I'll be like, hey, how was your score last night? And she's like, 85. And I'm like, oh man, I was a 70. But otherwise, I let her ask me or tell me first.
What's really interesting, I think, you know, the Oura Ring is in a very unique position to actually change now people's how their day will go depending on, like, yeah, if you get the crown or not, because you're actually giving some type of, if you give it some type of positive feedback, you might actually change that person's mentality about how the day is going to go.
Yeah,
because, you know, they're feeling more positive, so it's kind of almost like a feedback loop.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah,
anyways, thank you. I really appreciate your time today, and for our viewers, we're going to put a little link for them to go to the Oura Ring so that they can get one.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks a ton for the time. And thanks again for putting this together, Sanjeev. I appreciate it.
All right. Okay. Take care.
All right. See ya. Bye.